Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Thursday, January 30th, and we will be doing public hearings on the Oregon State Board of Clinical Social Workers and the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. So I will open a public hearing right now on House Bill 5007, the Oregon State Board of Clinical Social Workers. Before I actually kick this in, let me note that Senator Gordley requested the members of the committee to receive a copy of Senate Bill 786, and those are at your places this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Olson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you'll notice on the memo that I distributed to your office yesterday, there actually lists two bills for this board, 5007 and House Bill 5008. 5008 is a fee bill. However, we will not be having a hearing on 5008 because we have discovered that the fees have not been increased during the 01-03 biennium, but they are intended to be increased in 03-05, so it's not necessary to have a fee bill. That issue will come before the 2005 Legislative Assembly.
Does that apply also to the ones we heard yesterday?
Madam Chair, no. Those fees were raised in the 01-03 biennium and do need a fee bill for ratification. So we'll start in on House Bill 5007, the budget bill for the Board of Clinical Social Workers. Again, it's a completely other funded agency through license and application fees. There was a budget note attached to the last during the last session, and the board was directed to study the agency's cash flow and any balance requirements and investigate the costs and benefit of changing the renewal schedule to a staggered biennial renewal process. The board did that. They reported to the June 2002 emergency board, and they concluded that there are some obstacles right now in making that change. Primarily, the executive director is due to retire, and they thought they'd rather wait until the new executive director came on board and looked into making that change there. There are no audit reports that were done and no interim studies. Again, in 1999 session, the board was directed to lower their fees, similar to what we talked about yesterday, because they had a large ending balance. They did that. Those fees were maintained at that reduced level for 01-03, and now the board is seeking permission from the legislature to increase those back to where they were in the next biennium. And you can see on the LFO analysis the change in those fees. New application is up $25. Renewals are up $15 to $20.
And are these for the biennium or are these annual?
These are annual fees.
Annual, okay.
Right. And there are a few policy packages that the board has included. One is to purchase two filing cabinets for the office. Another is to increase funding for potential office relocation within Salem. Their lease at the current building they're in is due to expire, and they're looking at relocating their office. And so there's a $1,200 policy package for those moving expenses. And then there's the 070 package, which is a reduction package for revenue shortfall if the fee restoration is not approved. If the fee restoration is approved, then Package 104 would restore those cuts that were made in Package 070. And it's just a technical thing that we have to do to balance the budget.
Questions or comments for Mr. Olson? Thank you. Ms. Byes, please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Byes, and I am the administrator for the Board of Clinical Social Workers. It is my pleasure to be here. This will be my last time as I have retired and am finishing up some work for the board and will end my working career in July of this year. So it's been a wonderful journey.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Mission of the board. Well, the board was created in 1979, so we're looking at our 25th anniversary coming up this summer. And created under ORS 675, 510 to 600. We are a consumer protection board. The board is funded by other funds. The board is comprised of 4 licensed clinical social workers and 3 public members. One of our public members is a certified drug and alcohol counselor, and that brings to the board another component, which is a very nice one. Licensing in Oregon is voluntary. We do not have a practice law. It is a title protection law. That means no one can use the title unless they are licensed by this board. The board holds their meetings every month on the second Tuesday, and once a year we have an annual planning meeting that we hold outside the Salem area, and this has proven to be very beneficial for the board because as they meet monthly, they don't always have the privilege of time to really get into some of the issues. So at the annual planning meeting, that's what happens. We do a whole list of topics for discussion, and they really brainstorm and have a good time doing it. Consumer protection is accomplished by setting a strong standard of practice and through the regulation of the and disciplining of the social workers. It is the most important activity that the board handles, and probably one of the busiest ones, too. The board has 2 major regulatory activities, and that is consumer protection, a certified clinical social work associate. This is the pre-licensing activity. In order for someone to become licensed, they have to enter into a plan of supervision with the board and follow through on that plan until completion, and then they take a national exam to become licensed. And the other part, of course, is the licensing process, and that is once they take the exam, they have to also take a self-exam on our statutes and rules. We want to make sure that they know them. And interesting enough, we expect 100% on this little exam. It's only 25 questions. But interesting enough, there's several people that really don't pass. We allow them up to 3 incorrect answers, which really is not right, but, you know, we do that, and then we make them take it over and over until they pass it. And if they can't get through it right, then this person helps them read the questions and find the answers. It's just important that they know what we stand for and what we regulate in our law.
So does everyone eventually make it through, or
yes,
there people that just fall out the bottom of it?
Representative Morgan, no, they do pass. They do, usually about the second or third attempt. It's interesting because they somehow don't seem to, well, one of my pet peeves with the MSWs is they don't like to read, and they like to do their work, but, you know, reading is not a high priority for them. So we pound them. We do. We get them through the process. The associates must maintain their certificate. In other words, they have to renew their certificate until they have completed the complete process for licensing. This keeps them under the governing control of the board. Should anything happen in a way of an ethical violation during that time that they finish their plan of supervision till the time they take the exam and become licensed. Licensees must meet a continuing education requirement, and this is a total of 40 hours reported on a 2-year reporting cycle. We used to have all CE reported annually, but we have now gone to odd-even licensing so that the odd-numbered licensees have to report their CE and report 40 hours. Then the following year, the even-numbered licensees report their continuing education. During that renewal process, the computer spits out a 10% audit. If they are audited, it's identified on their renewal notice, and then they have to completely send in all their certificates of attendance to prove that they've taken what they're reporting. We also have the even-numbered ones. Of course, that moves the workload a little bit faster because they don't have to report the continuing education, so that does help. It's helped quite a bit with that. But we're still finding some difficulties in the renewal process with the workload because even though they are making out their CE reports, they're not always completing them. properly. So we end up pulling them out and sending them back, and that does slow the process down. The board is a policy-setting board for consumer protection. It's maintained by 2 point FTE, two full-time equivalent positions. I'm full-time, and I have two staff that are right now both part-time at 30 hours a week, but it's a 1.5 FTE. Performance measures. This little exercise for me, I must say, was rather challenging because it's the first year, and I must give public thanks to Rita Conrad for her help in getting me through this formatting process. I've worked for the board these many years, and the primary focus has always been to find ways to be more efficient, better turnaround times, and that sort of thing. So, but to put that into a performance measure, for me, was difficult, but we did get it done, and they are in the budget, and they have been approved. The idea that there's a better way and to eliminate roadblocks and to reduce the perceived bureaucracy has continues to be a real priority for our agency. We want to help these people, but at the same time, we want them to comply with all rules and regulations that are placed upon them. Some of the major goals that we're looking at: continue to protect the citizens of Oregon through our disciplinary process, to continue working for increased efficiencies to better serve the public, to continue reviewing and auditing the continuing education to keep them on their toes for competency. And we also work with the National Association of Social Workers. They have an Oregon chapter, and the Association of Social Work Boards. This organization is the national organization for all state boards of social work that belong to the, we call it the ASWB. They hold two meetings a year that we attend. One is the annual fall meeting, and that is their business meeting, and then the spring meeting is generally focused on a major continuing education effort. Budget note. The board was directed to study the idea, and as Mr. Olson indicated, we did discuss it, we talked about it, we talked with our computer consultant. It's not a difficult thing to make a change. The biggest problem is educating the licensees to do this. So with my outgoing, the board and I decided that we would defer this effort and look at it in more detail after they have a new administrator. So that's something that they're going to be looking at over the next couple of years. Generally, our agency is considered one program at this level. We have little programs within our agency, but for this purpose, that we are one program. We certify associates, and those are the people who are just pre-licensing, going through the plan of supervision. Plan of supervision is a pretty complex effort for the board. They have to, after they make their application, they have to find an LCSW to supervise them. They have to be employed in an agency. We monitor that supervision and that plan through the receipt of 6 month reports from the supervisor. And these are all on our prescribed forms that we send out to them. And when we do oftentimes get calls from a supervisor not quite sure how to deal with one of their MSWs, if they're having some difficulties. Sometimes there's personality problems as a supervisor is supervising an MSW. Many times they go through that process very smoothly. They're very happy with their supervisors, and the supervisors are doing a great job of mentoring, supervising, training, teaching these people, so that when they get through, we hope to have a very qualified first-class social worker out there helping other people. Licensing is done, as I mentioned, through the national exam. This is owned by the Association of Social Work Boards. They have to pass with a grade of 70. Some states require 75. All 49 states use this exam. California did for 10 years and then decided it was too easy, so they backed out of it, and now they have their own state-constructed exam. If a licensee is coming in from another state, if they've taken the exam, the clinical exam by ASWB, we do not require them to retake it. They can just meet our requirements based on their previous license if the requirements are equivalent to our own or better. Auditing continuing education reports for compliance, this is one of the things that we do annually. Consumer protection, as I mentioned, continues to be a high priority. You have in front of you some statistics that I put together every year I keep track of those categories and how we discipline them. The board manages this process by having three board members that serve as the Consumer Protection Committee. They meet monthly, as the board does, just prior to a board meeting. We have a separate agenda. We go over all the pending complaints that are in place, discuss them. Sometimes there's a need to have a licensee to come in and meet informally with the committee. Once the complaint is received, I send a letter out to the licensee to outline the allegations that have been filed. They have 30 days to respond in writing to the board in response to those allegations. And sometimes when the responses come in and they match them up with the complaint, there's sometimes questions or sometimes things that aren't quite clear. So this is the time when they'll ask the licensee to come in. Occasionally they will ask a complainant to come in also. That does help speed up the process. We are mandated to try and resolve complaints within 120 days. There are cases that don't get resolved in 120 days, and we do have the board vote to extend those on a 30-day period to get them through the process. In August of last year, the board issued emergency suspension of a licensee. That is still in the process of being resolved. Currently, there's a pre-hearing conference scheduled in late February, so that's one of the ones that will be continually extended, the 30 days to meet that 120-day law requirement. As I mentioned, the board holds a yearly meeting away from the office to review all of its previous goals that they've kind of encountered over the years. They use this time to review the rules, to look at their policies that they have established, to consider necessary changes to rules, and to identify any potential problems to plan for future events. Accomplishments: the successful transition from the health-related licensing board, agency number 833, was a major transition for us, and it went very smoothly. We are now what we call a separate state agency. We have our own agency number. Being part of the 833 group was time-consuming, cumbersome, many delays, and we were actually paying two agencies for our services. This was in the last biennium. So now we have it all in place in one place, and it's working very well, and I'm very pleased with the response and time that we get from DAS as they do our accounting, as they do our payroll and that sort of thing. It's been very good. Major program changes over the years. Really, the biggest change for this board was back in 1990 when they went from a registration law to a title protection law and implemented the clinical social work associate pre-licensing part. That's been the major change, and we've been working with that now these last 10 years. All activities and operations are going very well and efficient. The exam process is very smooth because once they've completed their plan and they're eligible to take the exam, then they step into another process with the Association of Social Work Boards. They take in the money, they schedule the exam, so we're not involved in that part of it. It's not part of our workload other than to notify and get the scores back. Once we get the passing grades, and some of them don't pass, they have to retake, and they have up to 90 days. They have to wait 90 days to retake. So that's so they can actually change the exam. The cost of the exam right now is $175, so that's outside any revenue. We don't take any of that revenue. The province of Alberta, Canada, and Nova Scotia, the Virgin Islands, and the District of Washington are all part of the ASWB organization. And so it's no longer American States boards. It's American Social Work boards because they're gathering more. Our performance and workload, our computers are updated, and technology provides the board with the ability to respond to requests quickly. We have a computer consultant that we have used for several years, and when he started with us, he was a student at Johns Hopkins University, and I must say we've been very privileged to have him. He's grown with us, and we've grown with him in the technology side of it. He keeps our database up to date. He keeps finding new and streamlined methods to put into it, and it's been wonderful. We have a very sophisticated database, and we can find just about anything we want, produce reports that are requested, and we are able to do it in a very good turnaround time. As far as our cost controls, being co-located with other boards has been a really savings for us. We share copiers, we share other services, and fax machines, and so we're not paying the whole amount, we're just paying a portion. So that has been a very good cost savings. And as Mr. Olson mentioned, we are looking to move this year. Later this year, there's a building being renovated. It's the old PGE building down on Liberty Northeast. We're slated to move into that. Still a lot of details for them to work out, but that's what we're looking towards. And we're also working with the Morrow people to, if necessary, to extend our lease where we are, because that's up July 1st. So that's something that's in the works. Having the advantage of our technologies, you know, like email and e-government and this sort of thing, has been really a time saver. My daily routine is, as soon as my computer's up, I check the emails and try to respond to them immediately before I even begin the work of the day. So it's really a great tool.
A question.
Yes.
On the issue of having the people that you license send back their renewal forms on time, have you had any discussions about making that available on the web for people, or is it available on the web?
Representative Morgan, not at this time. Our website does have the forms downloadable, but that is one of the goals that the next administrator is going to be tackling. That's something in the future for e-government, is to be able to renew online. Because of our continuing education component to the renewal, they have to have that. That's an integral part of the renewal. So right now it hasn't been easy thing to pursue, but that's something the board is looking at. It's on their list of goals to look at over the next couple of years. I don't know if they'll be able to accomplish it in the next 2 years, but quite possibly at least get it started.
I notice in reading through the copies of your newsletter that mm-hmm. you have included in your binder that it is quite a time-consuming operation for you to get that process completed.
Yes, it is. We have 3 months of late a grace period that they can clean up their CE if they're deficient, and that's attached to late fees. They have to pay late fees on those things. It is a heavy process. It comes starting about mid-November, and we usually start winding down about now. We're catching up to all of it. But our turnaround time, because of our computer system, has been very good. The peak times is right around the holidays at Christmas time, when that workload is the heaviest, and we get a little lagging behind, but we're still getting licenses out just about every with a 2-week delay. So that's a huge improvement over years past.
Could part of the issue then in the difficulty in getting the responses back from the licensees and the issues that you have with missing data and that kind of stuff be related to having all this happen over the holiday season, where people are focused on their families? And
it's quite possible. Many times these people are somewhat notorious for waiting till the last minute to get the renewals in. Licenses expire on December 31st, and it's amazing how many renewals we get with the postmark of December 31st that could have been sent in November. They didn't have to do anything other than write the check and send it in. A lot of it is the kind of people that we deal with. Most of them are very efficient, but there are just enough that are lagging behind, you might say, that create that little extra effort.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The board has one system with 3 computers, and we are interconnected in the office together so that we have access to everything that's on there. The board's database, as I mentioned, continues to be fine-tuned. The young man that I was speaking of, his name is Grant Moyle, and he is a very busy man, but he is off-site. He can access our computer and take care of any little glitches or problems that come up from wherever he is in the world. We've had him come in from Stockholm, from London, and fix little things that we needed to have done right now in order to continue our process. So he's been definitely a godsend for our board. It's just been wonderful to have him. And he does find new ways and to help, you know, put the newest process in place for us. And it's just been, I don't know how well we would have managed without his efforts. In reference to Senate Bill 786, Senator Gordley, if you'll look, there's a little handout in your materials that is part of our application forms, and right at the top of it, it references Senate Bill 786. We've been collecting that kind of information long before Senate Bill 786 was put in place, and it has been a real help. Because we oftentimes will get calls from licensees or citizens looking for a therapist who, and as I mentioned in here, who speaks FOSI. It took us a while to find that one, but we did find it on our database. And many times we've had calls for sign language, therapists who do sign language, and Braille. We do have several blind therapists, so it's quite a variety of people that are doing this kind of work. So we're hoping, and we have it all coded, that that information is available.
Senator Gordley. Thank you very much. I appreciate your report and the information that you're providing. I do have several questions. One, what response did you get to the request for voluntary information under Senate Bill 786. How many surveys were sent out, and how many did you receive in return?
Representative Morgan, Senator Gordley, we haven't really focused on sending out any surveys for that kind of information, mainly because of the fact that we've been gathering it on our application forms, and they do respond to the information, and even more so since we put that particular paragraph in there. But we haven't formally done any surveys for that particular issue.
All right. If I may follow up, do you have data, and perhaps it's in the materials we have, that shows the racial and ethnic background of licensees? I ask the question wanting to probe a bit, trying to get a sense of how diverse is the profession becoming. So do we have data that tells us what that looks like?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, it's in our computer, and it's probably something that I would have to ask our consultant to help. He would either write a special program that may already be there that we can actually pull a report that identifies the different ethnic backgrounds. We certainly, from my personal work with these people, as I talk with them, we do have a wide variety of ethnic people. But I will have that looked at and see if we can't pull that report for you.
That would be very helpful.
Okay.
Being able to look at the data would tell us specifically where we are. A couple of additional questions, Madam Chair. Does the board have a cultural competency standard as a requirement for certification?
Competency standard?
Cultural competency.
I'm not quite sure. You mean as far as getting a board member of an ethnic background?
Does the board, or how does the board determine whether persons wishing to be licensed are culturally competent? Or is this an issue that has been discussed by the board?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I don't believe that's an issue that has been discussed.
Thank you.
Okay.
Further questions, Senator?
No.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Our professional service contracts, we only have a few. We do have a part-time investigator that we use on an as-needed basis. We have them under contract. We have our... let's see, I'm not quite sure how many contracts we have, just a few. But we annually, we review those each biennium, and if they need to be renewed, then we take care of that. And as I mentioned earlier, the board's website is going to be a focal point for the next biennium to get that updated and get as much information on there as we can. It is a good website right now, but it does need some updating. And our policy packages, the major one, of course, is the revenue shortfall that you're going to be dealing with. We do have an affirmative action statement in our budget that we follow the and comply with all aspects of the governor's affirmative action directives.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I'd like to address the affirmative action report for a moment. It is noted on page 33 in our notebooks that at the time that one recruitment opportunity came up, this agency placed an advertisement of the position in a local newspaper, and it ran for just a Sunday edition that did bring a response of 17 applications, narrowed down to 6 for interviews. I would just like to point out that that kind of recruitment is it's inadequate, and I would suggest that in the future the agency look at a much broader recruitment that includes getting notices to Oregon's publications that serve racial and ethnic populations. There are newspapers that are read statewide by the Hispanic community, for example, the Asian community, certainly the African American community. Just based on the information that's here in your report, I would say that much more could be done to do a much broader outreach.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I respond? Senator Gordy, I will get this message to the board as they go through the recruitment process for my replacement, and we'll see if we can address some of your concerns in that regard.
Thank you.
I was curious about where you were in the process of finding your replacement. Have you begun?
Madam Chair, yes. The board has a timetable that they're working with. They hope to have a replacement hired by June 1st so that we can sort of double fill for 2 board meetings, so that I will be there to help train that person through 2 board meetings for the follow-up work and the pre-work. Right now, I have drafted a job announcement because I know what the duties are. The board has a personnel committee that is working on questions and qualifications, what the requirements are going to be for that person. That's why I appreciate your comments, because I will get that to the board and to that committee so that they can address those concerns.
So this is a good time in your process,
yes,
to interject Senator Gordley's concerns.
Very definitely.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could ask,
yes,
one additional question. Are there any people of color on your board?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, right now, no. If you recall, we used to have 2 African American. One was a Native American. They both had to step down. One had to step down because he was a hearings officer. When the hearing panel came in place, he had to resign. The other one did not seek reappointment. Right now, we have one Hispanic female. Our board chair is Hispanic. But we are very definitely aware of that, and we were very pleased to have that representation on our board when we had it.
Thank you, and I appreciate that awareness. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Representative March.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, but it might be more of a comment, but for you to take back to your board, of course, to get cultural and ethnic diversity in the field, you'll need to go upstream to the schools of social work. And I don't know what the board's ties are and connections with the schools of social work are, but their encouragement for those schools of social work to recruit diverse population into their schools will help in the population of your licensed clinical social workers.
Madam Chair, Representative Marsh, I think once we pull the stats on the cultural diversity that we have in our licensees, I think I'm going to be even pleasantly surprised at the cultural diversity that we do have.
Right.
Just talking with Asians, Chinese, Japanese, Indian. I can name maybe a few more that we've dealt with over the years that have become licensed. One of the prerequisites for my replacement will be most definitely be a state government experience. That's really important for this position, to have state government experience and know the ins and outs of state government. So that will be the primary prerequisite, but certainly we will address the diversity and cultural things. I think that about concludes my formal presentation.
Senator Messerby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to expand a little bit on the complaint summary you handed to us. And I appreciate, first of all, the way you've laid this out. It's very informational. But I understand that a total of, in 2002, you had 25 complaints, and only one was there action taken. Does that mean that the 24 were invalid complaints, or how do I read that?
Madam Chair, Senator Mercily, not necessarily. Many of the complaints are dismissed for lack of grounds or finding no violation. Some of the complaints come in are complaining about a billing problem, or some of them deal with custody evaluations, and those are difficult because many times a custody evaluator is appointed by the court, and there's always one angry side when there's a custody evaluation done. It's just a given, so we get many of those. And once we've had the response and look at the process that the evaluator does, and if there's no violation, we do dismiss those. There may be some that enter into stipulated agreements with the board, but the board this past year in 2002, there's not been a great many disciplinary actions issued. The biggest one we're working on is the emergency suspension right now.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, first, congratulations on 15 years and retirement.
Thank you.
I was joining you.
You're going to be joining me?
I wish I was joining. Unfortunately, I'm not retiring in July. Looking at your performance measure data summary, that's kind of a spot I look real quickly because we're looking at a lot of agencies and some big agencies, and that's a quick way of getting an idea of what's going on. And I just wanted to point out that I know this may be new for your agency, but you basically have targets laid out starting in 2002, but you have no data for your two performance measures. And it would be nice to see something there. The first one you had was percentage of complaints resolved within 1 year. It would be nice to have some numbers in there if we could have. And also you may want to consider putting in there license suspensions, revocations, or disciplinary actions that the board has taken, so we have more of a feel for what's going on.
Okay.
It's hard for us to dig through all the data you've got here. And if it's on the summary, it's quick and easy to see. And would give us a better idea what's going on inside the agency. That may be something you want to consider for your next, executive summary that occurs.
And Chair, Representative Bates, I am taking notes.
Thank you.
I will make sure that gets put through.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments by the committee? Mr. Patton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Patton, Department of Administrative Services. This morning I will be going over this handout, 2003-05 Governor's Budget. If you will turn to page 2, this is an overview of the Governor's Budget for the Board of Clinical Social Workers. As you can see, the budget contains about $511.68 other funds, which is about a 2.4% increase over the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget. The board does consist of about three positions, 2.50 FTE, and this has remained pretty stable over the past biennium. On to page 3. This chart just shows that the board is completely 100% other funds. These funds are supported by application fees, initial certificates and licenses, renewals, delinquent fees, and other miscellaneous charges. Page 4 is a brief overview of what's included in the governor's budget. The governor's budget continues the current level of services to its licensees and citizens. It also provides for the cost of moving the board to the Portland General Electric building, which was discussed by the board. Budget also would include some funds for the purchase of two file cabinets, and it would increase the fee structure back to the 1997-99 fee levels. These fee levels were temporarily reduced to about a concern about high cash balances in 99-01, and the recommended budget would only leave the board with about 3 months ending cash balance for next biennium. So in order to maintain the current level of services, fee would need to be increased. Page 5 shows the program units for the board. As you can see, they do include just one program unit, which covers all licensing, enforcement, and administration. Page 6 shows a breakout of their personal services and supplies. As you can see, personal services is just slightly higher up budgeted amounts than services and supplies. Personal services would include all employee compensation, wages, benefits, temporary appointments. Services and supplies covers all board operations, attorney general, rent, things like that. Page 7 is kind of the building blocks for the governor's budget. The board did not attend any emergency boards during the interim. The only adjustment to their budget during the interim was a compensation plan adjustment, which was awarded in the third special session. As far as the essential packages, the only in the package 010, as we call it, there is a small reduction for mass transit tax. There's also a program adjustment for the board, which is a phase out of one-time expenditures from last biennium for some office equipment. They purchased fax machines, some new phones, some increased printing costs. The board also used a standard inflation factor of 3.5% for all their services and supplies and 12.4% for attorney general. This also included the state government service charges adjustment, which includes DAS fees, treasury fees, state library fees.
May I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
The services and supplies part of this budget is somewhat higher than we've seen. And can you give us any idea of where this budget kind of sticks out in areas that other comparable board and commission budgets don't?
Madam Chair, as far as the smaller boards that I've been working with, usually since there is a limited amount of FTE in positions, the services and supplies is usually a little bit higher because of professional services and attorney general costs. The board does a lot of investigations and complaint issues, which they do have to use the attorney general central hearings panel, which this board has not used quite as much. That is usually a larger cost. And rent issues, it's being a small budget, usually those sites or portions of the budget would cause the services and supplies.
Well, for example, I'm looking at the presentation you're going to take us through next, which has to do with the licensed professional counselors and therapists,
mm-hmm.
and they have 37% of their budget involved in services and supplies, as opposed to 45% for the clinical social workers. And so I'm just interested in what are the different factors in the clinical social worker situation that changes the balance in their budget as opposed to the other budget? And if I'm not, if you could try to put together some kind of a comparison and get it back to Mr. Olsner, work with him on it, I would very much appreciate that.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Warren.
Thank you. I thought I detected during the discussion two factors that would probably add into that, and we'll find out the data, but I think one of them was the investigator, and the second was the you apparently have a contract with the computer specialist who maintains your database, and so that one in this small budget probably, those two probably make the difference.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we begin page 7, we were down to, I guess we're on page 8 now. Turn the page. The revenue shortfall by the board, which we call a package 070, causes the board to reduce funds in order to maintain their services within their legally amounted number of fees. Without the fee increase, we have to lower the board's current level of service to match what they can currently support with their fee structure before the increases. In this reduction package, the board would have to reduce two positions, 1.50 full-time equivalency, which is the two support positions for the board director. And they would have to make a reduction in services and supplies, which would include professional services and attorney general costs. The board did receive a program reduction. This reduction was in in-state travel. It was in a package that was awarded last biennium. And the board chose to use these funds for a survey of their clinical social worker associates. And so the budget management division and the governor decided, since these funds weren't technically used as an in-state travel, then we didn't include them in the next biennium's budget. The board did have a few policy packages. The first policy package is for $1,240, and this is just for the purchase of two file cabinets. The second policy package of $1,200 is the funds that would allow the board to move to the Portland General Electric building, and these are just the moving costs. On the next page, the last policy package is a restoration of the current service level. This would include the increased fee structure, which would allow the board to take in about another $123,000 of other funds revenue. This new revenue would allow the board to restore both the positions and the reductions taken in services and supplies that were taken in the 070 package. The package, however, doesn't restore central hearings panel costs and the inflation related to that, because the board during the last biennium has not used these services as much as it was projected during the last biennium, so we went ahead and just reduced that and didn't restore that for the next biennium. They just used a small portion of this budget, about $2,000, for central hearings panel. The only technical adjustment to this budget was for the elimination of the merit increases. This is currently a project that Budget Management and the Legislative Fiscal Office are working on methodologies to try and decrease all agencies' budgets for these costs next biennium. Other than that, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Senator Gordon.
Madam Chair, I don't wish to be picky here, but I just have a question. Is there a warehouse someplace with surplus supplies no longer being used by a given state agency where you could pick up a 2-5-drawer lateral filing cabinet instead of paying $1,240? I'm just wondering.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, there is a surplus property here that does collect surplus property, but quite frankly, the minute those filing cabinets hit their floor, they're almost gone. We do, we have been out there. I take things out there as I get rid of things, and we do kind of research and see what's available. The filing cabinets that we're talking about house all of the licensing files. They will match the ones that we already have that we've acquired over the years.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to have a better understanding of the ending balance of what it was. From looking at the figures, I assume that you had an excess of around $180,000. I'm curious as to how many years it took you to build that up. Is that just since the last fee increase, or which was, what, about 4 or 5 years?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, the fees that were established, I'm trying to remember which biennium, the fees that we want to go back to were established, I'm sorry, I can't remember the year. It seems to me it was 91, 93, it might have been in that biennium. And because the board has grown steadily, we haven't seen any real surges or decreases. It's just been a real steady growth. Naturally, that ending balance accumulated more money. In the 99 biennium was when they asked us to reduce the fees because of the large ending balance, and then we were instructed to look at doing the renewals differently and that sort of thing to kind of balance things out. I did come before the Ways and Means last biennium to restore them back, but they reviewed all of our expenditures and revenues and determined that we could go another biennium without going back to those fees. This was a little disappointing to me, but we've managed. We've gone through this biennium, and But with the projection of a almost negative ending balance, it is just really necessary to go back to those fees and rebuild.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, thank you. Jeremy, I'm going to kind of throw a strange question at you, and if you don't know the answer and there's been no discussion, don't feel like you have to answer. Okay. I'm a physician who regularly refers patients to psychologists, social workers, marriage counselors, professional therapists, and I try to tailor that to what that patient needs, of course. I really have a difficult time understanding why each one of these groups has a different board and why they're not under one simple board. I see a lot of redundant work here going on, redundant computer systems, redundancy as far as licensing is concerned, and it just doesn't seem a very efficient way to handle these groups by spreading them out. And they have so much in common clinically. What really happens with patients, it seems strange to me that we have all these different agencies, or boards, I should say. So my question to you is, has there been a discussion about combining these into one board and settling? Now, that walks into something we call a turf battle, and everybody wants their own little board to run things for them, and we have those turf battles with the VME and the nurses and other groups, but at least those groups are substantially bigger numbers, and so there's some efficiency in those numbers. I'm just questioning why we have all these different boards when I think maybe it can be done by one.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I don't have a definite answer for that. That would really be a governor's policy issue that he would deal with, and as far as on our side, I would not know the answer to that question.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I comment?
Yes.
You are correct, Representative Bates, that part of it is a turf issue. I think a major part of it, though, is the academic degree issue. There's differences in how these people are trained through their academia, and I think that has an impact on it. Over the years, and as I mentioned, I've worked for the state now almost 26 years, we have come through many sessions with that threat, I guess we call it a threat. No, of course not. With that whole idea of combining, consolidating, and that. So it has been looked at before, and we always look for it to happen again. But these people do have strong lobbying groups, and as I mentioned, I work for the pleasure of the board, so that's it.
Oh, Madam Chair. Other boards have very diverse people who take care of. BME takes care of physicians,
right.
DOs, and also takes care of physicians' assistants and acupuncturists.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's plenty of leeway here. I think it comes down really to a turf battle, mm-hmm. and unnecessary duplication of effort,
mm-hmm.
something that the government is occasionally and rarely criticized for. This is a small issue, but it's one that goes to a larger issue of, are we doing an efficient job? So I would like to see the discussion sometime occur and see if people can get past their turf battles and actually make a significant difference in how these boards work. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Bates, I appreciate your giving me the opportunity to voice. I guess I could call it my frustration. Last year, maybe some of you know, I served on the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. My first experience, and the first conclusion I drew from serving on that committee was the inefficiencies of so many licensing boards. And at that level, in the policy committee, it came down to tremendous debates and arguments on the live internet in public. And I thought, this is really a huge problem. And I thought at the time, and I've talked to a lot of lobbyists about this, that why can't we have one or two licensing boards, depending on the depth or the education required, and then have subcommittees in that major main board to go out to the different levels such as this. I can tell you that what response I got back is that, Senator, it's been tried before, and you don't want to go there. But I really do believe that it's an area that we really should look at, mm-hmm. not only for service to the licensee holders, but just efficiency of government.
Further comments? I have no one signed up from the public to testify on this bill, but is there anyone here that wishes to come forward and testify?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I have one more comment I'd like to make. You have a handout that has a little binder on it, a little gray handout.
The gray one?
This one. The gray one.
Oh,
that one.
Okay.
I neglected to comment on that in my testimony. That is the results of the study done by Karen Knight, who we put on contract to evaluate our pre-licensing process, the clinical social work associate. There are many good recommendations in there that the board has kind of reviewed that report at its last annual meeting, and they will continue to work with that report to improve whatever can be improved upon in our activities. I just wanted to get your attention to it because I didn't mention it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone that wishes to come forward and testify on House Bill 5007? Seeing none, I would just like to take this opportunity, Ms. Bies. I know we're going to meet again, but just to recognize the contribution that you've made to the field and
thank
to the
state
of Oregon, and to congratulate you on a great career.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5007 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5510 and Senate Bill 5511, which pertains to the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this is another health-related licensing board. As the Board of Clinical Social Workers, the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists had legislation in during last session that pulled them out from underneath the umbrella of the health division that we talked about a little bit yesterday and that Ms. Bies referred to a little bit earlier. So it is a standalone agency now. It, like the other boards, is 100% other funded from license and application fees. This board also had a budget note last session that asked them to look at the cost and benefits of changing their license renewal system to a staggered biennial process. This board also reported the June 2002 emergency board and concluded that although there is merit in doing this, they have recently hired a new director, and so they are going to be working on this further during the next session or next interim and look to implementing the e-commerce license renewal system that was talked about a little while ago. There was a Secretary of State audit completed on this board, a change of director audit. You have a copy of the executive summary with the material that I delivered to your offices yesterday. There were no other interim reports or studies that were done. Last session, with regards to the fees, last session, Senate Bill 410 allowed the board to increase fees for administrative rule. They did that, and so you have Senate Bill 5511 before you also, which would ratify those fee increases that were approved by the last legislative session. And the budget, that the governor's budget includes, assumes the ratification of those fees. And in the LFO analysis, there's some additional information there. And, again, with respect to the fees, there is a package 070 that reduces expenditures should those fees not be ratified, and then there's a policy package that restores those reductions. There are no other increases or enhancements to the board.
Questions or comments from Mr. Olson from the committee? Seeing none, Ms. Cooley and Ms. Horner, please proceed.
Thank you. Chair Morgan and members of the subcommittee, my name is Julia Cooley. I am the new administrator for the State Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. And I'm happy today to present one of our board members, Nita Warner. She's serving the last year of her second term. We're actually going to ask her, with the approval of the governor's office, to continue one additional year with the board. She is our public member, and today we'll be addressing the subcommittee regarding Senate Bill 786, and we'll probably comment also on our compliance process. The mission of the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists is to protect the health and well-being of Oregon citizens by setting a strong ethical standard of practice through the regulation of counselors and marriage and family therapists. Major goals of the board are to continue to protect the citizens of Oregon from licensees and or interns who violate the code of ethics. This is accomplished through the board's disciplinary process. We have had, and I'll digress here for a moment, in the last year, several cases that have been very complex, several legal cases that have been very complex. They've involved, and this was my first month on the board, the FBI, law enforcement, other state regulatory boards, and have emphasized the importance to the board, or re-emphasized, I should say, on the mission of this board in terms of protecting the public. Major goals also include setting and enforcing reasonable standards for competency and conduct and minimizing roadblocks to licensure. They include providing effective regulation of licensees with minimum oversight and demand on resources, to increase stakeholder involvement in the development of standards, policies, and goals. I'll speak again to this in our performance measures. It's a very important aspect of what we will be doing as a board in the next few years, which is involving more stakeholders in the process of policy setting that the board pursues. To ensure adequate resources are available for the statutory obligations and improved services, to ensure the board's ability to swiftly address changes, especially in today's environment, to develop partnerships with communities of color, to increase the representation of people of color in the practice of counseling and marriage and family therapists. The board is organized. It has a 7-member policy board, which is appointed by the governor. I am appointed by the board. The board also has 2 half-time administrative assistants comprising 1 FTE. The programs within this board, the HSC operates as a single organizational unit. We license counselors and therapists. We have a mandatory intern registration, which really mirrors the associate program that the licensed board of clinical social workers now employs. I will talk a little bit later about that process, but basically I'm going to piggyback on to the conversation that Elizabeth Fies had with the committee around their associate degree or associate program. Another program is the compliance consumer protection aspect of this agency, which is probably paramount to its most important mission. And then to a lesser degree, but to keep the office running, is the administration. Budgetary issues include, and have since the beginning of this board, which is 12 years old, collecting sufficient revenue to cover the cost of doing business. I think that we have reached that point in 2001-03 with the increases that we implemented after the 2001 legislative session. And identifying an expenditure level to be able to carry out the board's mission in a reasonable and prudent manner, particularly in the areas of legal counsel and hearings. And I'll address that in a moment. A strategic business plan. I am new to the board, and I think that this is an area where the board will be putting more focus in the future. This has been a very a board that's taken on the work of the day-to-day work of the board. This board reviews applications. It performs degree reviews, performs investigations, and also deals with compliance issues and reaching to resolution. So the board members have not had a lot of opportunity to do strategic planning, policy setting, and that's an area where that we will see hopefully the time for them to be able to do that. I also want to say this is a board for the last 3 bienniums. May I have this wrong, so Nita can correct me because she's been here the whole time. Very few of the board members have been reimbursed for any of the expenses for serving on this board, and it was a way to reduce costs And we do now reimburse one member that travels from Ashland. But the budget for 0103 did include monies to be able to reimburse members, but we have wanted to push that to the end of the biennium to make sure that we could cover costs. So the people that have served on this board, and we have had most people have served their full 2 years, and because of recruitment problems, have usually thrown in an additional year before another member has been found to serve on the board. We will continue to use, and this is not a place that we've just really started to go, committees comprised of members and stakeholders to make recommendations to the board on policy issues. It has several different, it again will go to our performance measures, but it's a way to involve stakeholders in the activities of the board. Board meetings aren't well attended, and this is a way to create committees on different issues. Diversity would be one, where we not only study, we bring in people that are interested and that have the appropriate kinds of backgrounds to assist the board.
Ms. Cooley, could I interject? There are some members of the committee that are having difficulty with hearing you.
Oh,
would it be possible for you to speak more loudly?
Yeah. Is this... I'm sure you don't want me to start over, though.
No.
Yeah, we'll get by.
Program changes within the last 10 years. I think what I'll do is I'll highlight the last four program changes, although I've captured those in the budget book. We've recently streamlined the license application by requiring intern registration to ensure all applicants have received comparable supervised experience and explore means to license persons by reciprocity or with related degrees by establishing equivalent training requirements. That was in the year 2000. We are now using external exam administration, this way to cut costs and to reduce workload, and that was implemented in 2001. We removed fee amounts in statute and implemented a fee increase, and that was done in 2001. We've removed barriers to licensure for applicants with licenses in other states, called equivalency, and those are some of the recent changes that the board has implemented in the last few years. Oregon benchmarks performance measures. As a small regulatory agency, we do not have links to the standard Oregon benchmarks. Instead, the DAS Performance Measure Review Committee, with the assistance of Rita Conrad, assisted the board in establishing the following as our high-level outcome. The primary mission of the board is to protect and benefit the public by setting a strong standard of practice through the regulation of professional counselors and marriage and family therapists. And I'll come back to our performance measures in just a moment. To control costs and steps to implement efficiencies, I want to say that I shop at state surplus frequently. We use downloadable forms now. We're very proud of this, and notices which are available on our website. We've increased the use of email in place of telephone calls and mail requiring postage, and have are experiencing cost savings. We've increased the use of internet for research and legislative tracking and monitoring. We've expanded the use of the website to provide information and assistance to the public. This is an ongoing effort and one where we want to be able to free staff up to be able to keep our website in real time so that licensees and members of the public feel like if they can't get a hold of us in the office immediately, that's another resource to be able to access the website to see if any new issues have arisen or we've put out any new postings. An example of that will be we're headed into our renewal process, and as we will struggle with frequently asked questions, but questions always arise, and the ability to use the website in this way to post questions that are posed by people going through that process so that they can access. Perhaps what we do find is if someone has a question, sometimes a lot of people do, and that's a good use of website resources and reduces the need for phone calls. Use of telephone conference calls for special board meetings is something that we have used in the last 2 months on three occasions. Continuing co-location with the other two mental health licensing boards and five other professional licensing boards. I want to say, as a new administrator, one of my mentors is sitting in this in this room now, Elizabeth Vise. I have benefited, and our board has benefited from the co-location. The expertise that they have been able to provide me with has served both my ability to function as an administrator and been a benefit to the board. Part-time employees employed with flexible work schedules so that we can maintain as best as possible a full-day coverage with only two full-time equivalent positions. Purchases of website software and training to make website updates easier and faster. And I'll just quickly say there are a couple of these softwares available. This one's called Dreamweaver, and what it allows you to do without a lot of website expertise is to interact with your website on a daily basis and make updates, and the training is less strenuous than that to be an expert on websites. We worked with a DAS recently to identify an appropriate phone system. We were hoping to put the purchase of a phone system, and I say system, we have three phones, off to the 0305 legislative session or legislative budget. But we were unable to do that because two of our phones broke. In working with DAS, we were able to identify an agency that was expanding, and so we purchased telephones or our hardware at reduced cost. We were able, with the graciousness of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, to identify a phone system that the state contracts with, and they allowed us to piggyback or tag on to their telephone system. We purchased software that would expand their system. By doing these things, we realized a savings of around $2,500. Information technology systems. We've updated our Windows operating system and equipment in 2002. We did this through the a one-time expenditure limitation. Is that how my verbiage now? I'm working on my budget verbiage. We purchased what I call the kind of the Sears line of desktop computers. We had one of our old hard drives converted into a server. To maintain and track applicants, licensees, disciplinary cases, fees, provide work processing. This addresses some of the benchmarks that you'll see that we've created, where we are tracking data and using that data in a way to demonstrate to ourselves that we're meeting our goals. We share a building connection with a statewide area network to allow access to the state mainframe. We share a state email server with six other licensing boards. We use another board's fax machine when we need to fax. We file and receive numerous required reports by email, or provide data relating to child abuse reporting, support enforcement, and collections activities. We update a federal web-based national disciplinary network, finalize membership, and we're finalizing our membership as a reporter in the Healthcare Integrity and Protection Data Bank. This is something that's used, a data bank that will be used nationally by all 50 states. We maintain a website providing agency contact information, links to related local, state, and national sites, text of publications, a directory of our licensees, including compliance, actions, and sample forms, which are now downloadable. We contract for programming, systems development, and equipment expertise. We recognize the need to identify and invest in technology to save resources, increase efficiency, and meet public demand. We have, I guess this is just sort of related, but I included it. We have one piece of legislation this session, Senate Bill 166. I've included it as part of the budget presentation because it could possibly have a fiscal impact. It will establish continuing authority over the board over certain licensees. This is already an authority that two of our sister health licensing boards have, the clinical social workers and the Board of Psychologist examiners. This will, in the a situation where we would be investigating an individual, and because licensure has an annual renewal, we would retain authority if we were in the midst of an investigation. We would retain our authority even if the licensee let their license lapse. This is a public protection measure, so that if the final outcome, for instance, were revocation, then we would be able to put that on our directory and we would be able to share that information with the national database. It could have a fiscal impact only because if the license lapse, we would discontinue any kind of efforts along that line. Affirmative action report. Although supportive of the governor's affirmative action plan and goals with three positions and little turnover, I was the latest recruitment. Board success in affirmative action has been limited to temporary placements and recruitment of candidates for possible appointment to the board by the governor. Nita Werner also sits as a representative of the Hispanic community. Senate Bill 786 in the 2001 legislature, addressing cultural diversity in regulated health professions. The board conducted a voluntary survey of its licensees to gather information on racial ethnic diversity and on bilingual abilities of licensees. The board's plans to establish programs to increase the representation of people of color and bilingual people on the board and in the professions they regulate is just beginning to emerge. The board recognizes it must play a role not only in recruiting people as members to this board, but in encouraging people of color to enter this profession. Nita Werner will speak to her experience and involvement with the communities of color. I do want to just briefly mention the survey results. Out of 1,336 surveys that were distributed, we received just under 600. We have reported one African-American person serving in this profession, 5 Asian, 9 American Indian, Alaska Native, 7 Hispanic. When it comes to the bilingual, we realize we should have, there is a certification for bilingual, and we will be doing that in our next survey. Spanish, 24, American Sign Language, we only included American Sign Language with proficiency certification. There are 7. And then a whole number of people that speak a variety of different languages. Nita, would you like to?
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in, and I've been going through the documents I have here at my desk at least, I find no reports on the complaints of your board or any action that was taken, the types of complaints and the actions. The previous report we just saw I thought was very complete, and I was very pleased with that. Do you have that report, and could, if not, could we get it provided to us? And Madam Chair, if I might make a request, I would hope that all the boards that we review here include that in their reports in the future. I think that for public safety and the activity of the board, I think that's very important.
The chair concurs. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley has spoken to the topic I'm concerned about here, too. Again, the easiest place for me to see this is performance measures. And the performance measure apparently you've chosen on this topic is the percent of audited licensees who complete and document continuing education, which is worthwhile, but there's no really significant data there. And the other one is average number of days to complete an investigation from complaint to board presentation. That really doesn't tell me very much. What I'd like to know is what the board did with those, what the outcomes were. I want to see suspensions, revocations, disciplinary action, or just dismissal because it's inappropriate. I know you're dealing with a volatile population at times, and you're going to have complaints just because of the population of people you're dealing with. However, it would be nice and appropriate to have that kind of information next time around. Mm-hmm. I hope other boards do the same thing, because we really can't see much here of what's really going on.
Absolutely. Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, and Representative Bates, and members of the committee, it's my oversight. We actually do have a report, although it isn't as well designed as Elizabeth. I met with Elizabeth last night, and we were reviewing our testimony, so I will be able to go back and provide that information to the LFO and the BAM analysts. And your points are definitely being heard with regard to the performance measures. That process is one that I'm struggling to understand with the assistance of the Performance Review Committee, who are so helpful. And I believe that when we, and it sounds like more than one of us, but when I return to that group, that will be one of my major goals, will be to work on how we're measuring and how we're reporting. I was a little bit hesitant when it comes to the legal matters without the AAG. I am still very new to this, and the confidentiality factor and the sensitive cases that we're currently working with, I felt some hesitancy on what I could and couldn't report. And so I will provide a report immediately. Awesome. And we will work on our performance measures.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This also speaks to something that Senator Mesley and I obviously have not talked about but agree on. We have all these agencies coming for us with supposedly the basic program is to protect the public, and yet we don't see the same benchmarks or data coming out of these. And again, if you're under one agency or there was some uniformity here, it would certainly make a lot more sense for looking at, so we could have some idea of how well the licensing boards are functioning and working. And maybe the board should get together and discuss this with each other, or maybe they should be brought together. I don't know the best answer right now, but obviously this is sort of a higgly-piggly sort of world we're looking at. It makes it difficult for us to have any oversight.
I would concur with the discussion that's going on. I think that there are similarities in structure with the duties that all of these boards perform relating to licensure and relating to the investigation of complaints and issues that are brought forward by people that have disagreements by the way things unfolded. And at the very least, we need some kind of a process to take a look at the data that's related to that, that has some consistency across the field. And I think that as we get further into performance measures and how those are done, recognizing that we're kind of in the beginning of applying that concept to budgeting, that I hope that the standardization piece of this is a direction that we look to move in. And we'll have a discussion when we go into work session on all of these budgets about this issue, and I think that it is something that would benefit from our attention. Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I will mention to you that I believe it's tomorrow the full Ways and Means Committee is going to have a presentation on performance measures and implementation of this process.
Good.
And I am making notes of your comments and concerns. It might be a good time to refresh the, or remind or bring up those concerns again tomorrow during that presentation.
Thank you. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair. I'd like to ask you a question completely unrelated to that. Okay. When I read through this, I know that your board oversees licensed professional counselors and therapists, and it's a voluntary licensing program.
Yes, it is.
So the question that I have is, are there people who are in the public doing this work, don't use the word licensed, but put themselves out as professional counselors and professional marriage and family counselors who have no oversight but are still out there doing this job? And is this a problem for the public? How many people are involved in doing this? And is there some way this is being approached either through insurance companies requiring licensure, or is it just sort of a wide open situation out there?
I believe that Nita would like to respond to this.
I'm the public member, so...
For the record,
I'm sorry.
You identify yourself?
My name is Nita Werner, and I'm the public member of the Oregon Board of Counselors and Therapists. I'm a business owner in Hillsborough, and I also sit on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs as well as the Washington County Commission on Children, so I'm very active in the community. This is my favorite board. I've been on here for 6 years, and I feel like I am protecting the public And one of the things that we have repeatedly talked about is the fact that you do not have to have a license in the state of Oregon to be a counselor. We have complaints coming to us where people, and they're very horrific, and if they're not licensed by us, there's nothing we can do to touch them. There is a little bit of some help where you have to have a license to get paid by the insurance companies and to be on an insurance panel, so it does behoove the counselors to get a license. But if you're operating on the fringe and you want to do your own thing and not follow good practices, you do not have to get a license. The board has talked about within the next 2 to 4 years actually making a bill, presenting it, asking for mandatory licensure. There are states that do have that. I think Utah is one of them. And that would really, really help the public. But then we feel that we might have an uphill battle with the non-licensed counselors feeling that we are infringing on their right to practice their profession. So we have talked about that. That is a huge issue.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. We do have a responsibility in this body, I believe, to protect the public. You do, and we do. I don't think we'd allow physicians to practice without a license in the state anymore. At one time, we did.
Mm-hmm.
It led to certain problems. We're getting our problems it is when we're licensed, okay? I think it's a major consideration and something that's probably more important than what we're talking about this board. I've also heard some stories that were pretty horrific. And some of these people are preyed upon. You have people who are in emotional stress, who are looking for counseling, don't realize when they walk into somebody's office that person is not licensed, and I think they can be taken advantage of. And I think there is a significant factor. You may want to think about moving this forward for 2 or 4 years from now.
Yeah. We have talked about it, and like I said, the insurance companies are really helping us, because if you have insurance that covers mental health issues, they will only pay a licensed counselor or a licensed social worker or a licensed psychologist. You cannot go to someone who's not licensed. So that has been very helpful in weeding out some of the problems we've seen. But, yes, that is an issue that we have talked about and brought to the professional groups about mandatory licensure.
I think it would be interesting, too, in the data that you're going to give us about your complaint process, if there was a way that we could get a handle around what percentage of the claims you receive are people that you have no jurisdiction over.
And we do actually keep that on record in case they ever do apply. You know, some of the complaints we get are very horrific. We cannot investigate them because they're not underneath our purview, but we do keep them on file in case they ever do try to apply, and then we can pull that out and use that to prevent their licensure and, you know, put them on the national database.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You almost asked my question, a part of it at least. And I'm curious how many of the service providers in the state are not licensed, or what percentage maybe as well?
Chair Morgan, Senator Mesley, we do not, when I came to the board, it was one of the questions, because mandatory licensure is an issue. A little bit of the history is the board has been hesitant, it's my understanding, because they weren't, there were some indicators that the legislature wouldn't be amenable to that kind of regulation or that kind of mandatory regulation. So that really has been part of our history. I'm sorry, could you ask that question again?
What number of, or what percentage of our providers are not licensed?
I have contacted Oregon's professional organizations, and to date I have not been able, I don't believe we are able to capture that information. If you've got any ideas, that would be great. We capture the statistics, obviously, when someone's applying for licensure, but in terms of, there is no other that I'm aware of, any kind of registry or ability to capture the individual, the number of people that are practicing counseling and therapy that are not licensed in the state.
Madam Chair, follow-up question or comment, maybe. It would seem to me that there's got to be a licensing business or Internal Revenue or somebody would have some information if they have a business of this, of any kind.
Further questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Not on this subject, although I agree with everything I've heard thus far about the need to move toward mandatory licensing. And I don't know why we need to wait. We have enough experience to tell us that we need to do that. now. But with that said, I believe Ms. Werner was going to give us a report on how the board is moving forward with implementation of under Senate Bill 786.
Well, as you know, the state of Oregon has a very high dropout rate among minorities in high school. And so what I feel we need to do is we need to actually start talking to the high school students, because to become a professional counselor or a therapist or a social worker or a psychologist requires an immense commitment to education after education. You don't need a four-year degree. You need a master's degree minimum to be a counselor. You need a PhD to become a psychologist. So you have the attrition of the high school students who are dropping out. Then you have the students who do not realize that they need such a massive amount of education. And then after the education, they need an internship. So I've been talking to high school students myself, because I do give talks. And there's an interest in becoming a counselor or a therapist, but there's a real lack of information to the high school students on careers that are required. The requirement of the education. We have actually talked to a lot of our the counseling degree programs have to come through and be approved by our board, and we've talked to them about their diversity issues. They are trying to recruit students, but again, it's very difficult, because once the students find out that they need so much education, it's so hard for them to get an upper education as it is, and then to realize they need minimum of 6 years, then another year after that for internship. It's a huge obstacle to them. So we're trying to get the word out in high school, you know, plan ahead. This is really great. I'm also the chair of a scholarship committee for the Hispanic Metropolitan Chamber in Portland, and we're working with our professional organizations trying to get them to offer scholarships. And last year we actually had a counseling center that offered a scholarship for someone who was actually working toward their master's in counseling. And we actually got 4 applicants within the metropolitan area, which is really, really great. So there are ones that are coming through. There are minority students coming through the programs. But again, it starts in high school. The attrition rate is huge, and then the attrition rate in college, and then trying to get them through their master's program. So again, we're working with our professional organizations. We're working with the people, the degree programs that come through us, and I'm actually talking to high school students to get them interested. And I don't know what else to do. If you have any suggestions, I'd be more than welcome to hear.
I look forward to meeting with you.
Okay.
And appreciate the work that you're doing thus far.
No problem. It's interesting working with high school students, and like I said, it's a lack of knowledge about what is required, because when I talk about counseling, you know, when I actually meet with them, not just about counseling, but they think that they can go and get a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree and all hang their shingle out and be competent, and they do not realize that they need so much more education and so much more internship hours. And to them, that's just huge. And so they might immediately just ditch that idea for upper education and go to something else where they think that they just need smaller amounts of education.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Cooley and Ms. Werner, does this complete your presentation?
Not in it doesn't, but if you want it to. That's probably not the way I'm supposed to say that.
Given that we still have the DAS presentation and some public testimony, if we could roll it along, it would be appreciated.
Okay. I think that in terms of saving time, it appears to me, if I'm not incorrect, that there is great concern about having a better picture, if you will, of the complaints process and what we're dealing with, and that we have uniformity when we're presenting that information with our other health licensing boards. To that extent, I do want to say that DAS has small agency divisions directors getting together on a monthly basis, and there are a group of health licensing boards of which I am a member that are meeting afterward to tackle issues and to work more as a consortium, if you will, to do this very same thing. It's not an argument around other kinds of issues that the board will be dealing or that the committee will be dealing with. And so the HIPAA is the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act is one of those issues that we are struggling with the implementation, the impact on a board, and the impact on the constituency. But compliance issues is one area that we talk about consistently among ourselves, so I believe that we will be there to support what the committee's directive is. I have an agency program review that Jeremy's going to also talk about, which just again tells you where my statute is, the composition of the board, and I believe that you've read all of this in the budget books. The individuals that we serve, the public, the clients that we're serving to verify licensure and other kinds of activities. We work with the graduate level mental health counselors, the marriage and family therapists. We work with supervisors of registered interns. Our program, again, is very similar to the associate program with the clinical social workers. We work with Oregon schools that are board certified, and we work with the business community, including insurance companies and HMOs. In terms of performance measures, would you like me to? What I had done was say that we use audits, what our plan is, and we will actually be able to produce most of this information in the next 5 or 6 months and then be able to critique. I know that this is something that's dynamic, that's evolving, and is something that's very important to this board when in terms of being able to measure the effectiveness of our goals and the impact that we're having on this community. We're going to use audits. We're going to use surveys. We're working with individuals to understand how to create a better survey, maybe random telephone surveys. We're looking at, we've expanded our software and our database to so that it allows us to capture more information and produce more reports along the lines of the compliance. We have factors that have affected our services and programs, but I think that by and large, we haven't had up until this biennium the revenues to support our limitation. And so I have some arguments for to support the fee increase and ratification, and arguments to support an additional 0.25 FTE and a reclassification. And I think I'll just not address those right now and assume that the committee would have questions, and that might be a better use of time.
Further questions or comments from Ms. Cooley or Ms. Werner? I just wanted to say to Ms. Werner that I don't think we acknowledge nearly enough the contributions that the board members make to all of these agencies. And we all recognize the time that you're putting in out of your own personal life and carving things off of your family and your other commitments in your community and your professional commitments to do this. And thank you on behalf of the state of Oregon for doing that. If there are no further questions, let's allow Mr. Patton to present the DAS part of this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Patton, Department of Administrative Services. I will try and go through this as quickly as possible. Again, we will be going over the handout that should be in front of you for the governor's budget. Page 2 is a brief overview of the governor's budget. The board has $444,592 other funds, which is a 13.8% increase over the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session. The board also consists of three positions, 2.25 FTE, and as you can see, there is a slight increase in the FTE, which will be addressed in a policy package. Page 3 shows that the board is 100% other funds, which is collected through license fees, renewals, and other miscellaneous charges. Page 4 is a brief overview of the governor's budget. The budget does continue the current level of service to its licensees and citizens. It also includes a reclassification of two office specialists, two positions, two administrative specialists, two. These are the two support positions for the agency director.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did I miss something? I thought that the governor's budget did not include reclassification or step increases. Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, the governor's budget does not include salary increases or cost of living increases. However, when that decision was decided, I believe Mr. Patton can address this as well, those numbers that apply to each agency had not been developed yet. In fact, they're still in the process of developing those numbers, and those adjustments will be made in work session by the LFO. However, that does not include reclassification. Mm-hmm. That is a decision that will be left up to the committee.
Well, pardon me. I'm a little bit confused then. You might want to define some nomenclature here. What does reclassification mean then?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, reclassification is when the duties of a position have changed such that they no longer fit the classification specifications for that particular position. In other words, some of these positions may have been doing duties outside the scope of that classification. And so DAS, Department of Administrative Services, Human Resources Services Division, have done studies on some of these classifications and have found that some of these positions are, in fact, working outside their current class. And so they've recommended reclassification to the appropriate responsibilities and classification.
And follow-up.
Yes.
Haven't got to the second bullet point, but Senator Messerly raises, is the second bullet increases one administrative specialist, too, from a half-time to three-quarter-time. What's going to be the status of that position within the governor's budget? Hmm.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the status or the position I believe that the co-chairs are taking at this point is that no new positions can be established unless the agency can provide satisfactory justification for increasing positions. And again, that will be left up to the subcommittee to make a decision and recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee.
I might also add that when we do deal with the reclassification issue, we'll have the information that DAS used to base its decision on, and we'll be able to go backwards and forwards through that and see if we agree with that.
I might say, I'm going to step out on a limb here and make a real general statement, and it may not be correct. I'm wondering if the boards are under the assumption that because their monies are other funds and fees paid in and not general funds, if maybe that they are assuming that they can have increases in their positions.
What I would say is that I would assume that the other funded agencies, the boards and commissions, bring forward to this process what they feel is a budget that would best help them accomplish their goals in the next biennium, and that it is the purview of this body to go through that information and, based on our feelings and our discussions, to decide whether that's a wise course or not, and that's just what we'll be doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Madam Chair, along the discussion line, frankly, I'm not that concerned about this particular budget. I mean, this is a drop in the bucket, okay? But I think we're going to hear, and the concern we have is that when we look at budgets that have hundreds and thousands of employees, to go in and try to figure out what an office specialist 2 goes to an administrative specialist 2, what that means for us financially, and what it means long term for the PERS system and others, is something we really can't get our hands around when we're up here for 6 months looking at huge budgets within a 2 or 3 day period of time. And that's where we need LFO and others to be our watchdogs for us and really bring to us what that means. Mm-hmm. This is sort of a training program for us as much as anything in some ways. But I obviously don't know what Office Specialist 2 or Administrative Specialist 2 positions are, or what they pertain, or how much difference there is between them, and I don't really care right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you.
What I care more globally is when we get to those big budgets in a few weeks, not only this committee but others, of what those really mean. And is somebody gaming the system? Are we reclassifying people to gain income when the job that's being done has not changed dramatically? And that's something that's a much more difficult question.
What I would submit for the committee's consideration is that when I chaired the Natural Resources Sub in the last session, we got into this issue with relation to one of the agencies that we dealt with, and it is very complex. When you have people working outside their class,
mm-hmm.
There are a number of issues here besides mm-hmm. reclassify or don't reclassify, and I'm sure we'll all be dipping our feet into these as we go through these issues. but it is an interesting way in which budgets creep up cost-wise that we need to pay a lot of attention
to. Yes, we do.
And with that, if you have the train back on the track here, is that the... Go ahead. Finish up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The governor's budget also does include a ratification of the fees increased over the biennium. As Mr. Olson stated earlier, Senate Bill 410 did release the board's fee structure from statutes, which allowed them to raise their fees administratively, and they have brought those fee increases forward this biennium to be ratified. Page 5 shows that the board is only one program unit, and this program unit does cover all licensing, enforcement, and administration. Page 6 is a breakup of the board's personal services and services and supplies. What I might state here is compared to the Board of Clinical Social Workers, personal services has increased some in this board because of the reclassifications and the increase in positions, which might have made the shift in personal services S&S just because of the board's limited budget. A small change does make a rather large increase in the percentages. Page 7 shows the building blocks of the governor's budget. The only change during the interim for the board's budget was the compensation plan adjustment during the third special session. The board, in the essential packages, did increase their mass transit tax slightly, and there was one program adjustment to phase out one-time expenditures for computer enhancements and two office chairs that were awarded in a policy package during the last Ways and Means hearing last session. On page 8, the board did use a standard inflation factor of 3.5% for their services and supplies and 12.4% for attorney general, and it's also listed the state government service charge adjustment for DAS service charges, state library. The board did add a package for their revenue shortfall in order to balance their budget for the fee increases without the extra revenue. This shortfall package would reduce two positions by 1.00 full-time equivalency and make reductions in services and supplies. The board also received one program reduction for out-of-state travel. This reduction was made based on the actual expenditures from last biennium and for possible savings. The board did come forward with one policy package. It's kind of an all-inclusive package. This package restores all reductions made in the 070 package above for the revenue shortfall. It also brings in the fee amounts for the fee increases, which is about $151,000. Included in this package is also the reclassification of both positions, the administrative staff, and the increase of one of the positions from half-time to three-quarter time. On the next page is the only real technical adjustment to the budget is, again, for the elimination of the merit increases, which Budget Management and Legislative Fiscal Office are currently working on. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions or comments for Mr. Patton? Thank you very much. We have one person signed up to testify on Senate Bill 5510 and 5511, and that's Madeline Smith.
I'll be speaking extemporaneously.
For the record, could you identify yourself, please?
My name is Madeline Smith. I live... Do you want my address?
It would be helpful to have your address and whether you have any professional affiliations or...
Okay. My address is 594 West 11th Avenue, Eugene, Oregon. My professional... affiliations are, I do have a master's degree in early childhood education, and I've been sitting in on the Commission on Children and Families from before they received Senate Bill 555 to restructure all the agencies so that the services were streamlined and so that we would not have any more Thurston killings, because we were taking such good care of our children from birth onward that they wouldn't want to shoot anybody. I believe that's the point of that bill.
Thank you. Could we have your comments on these?
My comments are that Senate Bill 555 mandates a great many things, and I do not know how it interfaces with what you're doing with the licensing for other people, but I just know it all interfaces. And this is personal testimony. I have my own organization, Organization for the Lifelong Establishment Fraternity, and I got involved in the children's commission on account of I was trying to teach myself legislative process so I could figure out who to talk to see whether the new model code for paternity would include an adult child being able to sue for paternity. That's in the new model code. Now, I also, on account of my life history, have been in nursery school from the age of 18 months and traumatized. And then I became a nursery school teacher with a master's degree and a very low salary. So after 10 years, I ceased to be in that profession. And I'm horrified to see the low salaries of people still who are workers with young children, and that we now take children starting at the age of 3 months, whereas when I worked in the field, the child must be 3 years old before we take them. And the only relevance I have to your legislation is that there's like penny wise and pound foolish if we don't figure out how to give the budgeting process in such a way that the youngest children are really protected, and we have a situation where there's 40% turnover for daycare workers, which means that the youngest are not getting continuity of care, and that, of course, is vital for very young children. So I'm here to sort of ask, because I see how complicated the legal process is, and I appreciate that you need to be very careful in building law in a certain way. But if you pay child care workers $7 an hour at best, and then ask for the Commission on Children and Families to come up with all the requirements you're asking for, we're putting in tons of volunteer hours, but then we see a budget slash where basically we cannot do the mandates of Senate Bill 555.
Ms. Smith, if I could interject, I think your comments are very well taken, but this subcommittee deals with issues related to education, and we have a few of the budgets related to licensure boards that we are working our way through before we get to the education part of this. And if I might just suggest something, Senator Winters is the chair of the Human Services Subcommittee, and in her schedule, she'll be doing hearings on Senate Bill 555, and they're scheduled for towards the first part of February. And I think that for having you be in that part of this process in this building, your comments would be much better fit into that part
right.
of the process.
Right. I did understand that I was out of order in speaking here. It's just that at some human level, it's all in order.
I agree with you, and I think that all of us recognize here that this is going to be an extraordinary session as we work our way through the issues that we have to face this time in trying to provide the best level of service with the scarce amount of funding that we have. And I'm very concerned that your comments and your experiences get put into the process in the place where they can have the most impact.
Okay, well thank you. So Senator Winters?
Yes.
Okay, thank you much.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to be here. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 5510 or 5511?
Chair Morgan?
Yes.
I just would like to close in terms of the budget packages and address two issues. And I realize we're that Dr. Bates calls as a small drop in the bucket. The packages that we brought forward, and first of all, in terms of being other funded, we go through the same process, and I feel like one of the state agencies. So the way in which we're funded didn't really impact the way that we looked at bringing those packages forward. And I'm assuming there'll be a fair and equitable way that all of these issues will be dealt with. I just wanted to say that those packages that we put forward in terms of a 0.25 increase and came out of looking at the best way that we could do business, the most frugal way that we could do business. The thing that we have that we offer our licensees is to be able to talk to them, and it's really, because of the workload, that's a really big problem in what we're doing now. And so the reclassification, and I can appreciate looking at all of these, is about the interpretation of rules and laws, and that was the point at which it became a reclassification. That allows the board's three staff people to be able to provide a level of customer service in terms of providing information consistently without referring all of those questions to the administrator. So we will... I just wanted to make that statement, and thank you very much.
As we go to work session on this budget, we'll be discussing these issues with you in great depth. Further comments that you wish to make?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5510 and Senate Bill 5511. And I'm wondering, Mr. Olson, if you can give us a heads up on what we can expect on Monday.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. Again, there is no subcommittee meeting tomorrow. It's a full committee meeting. There will be some orientation and informational discussed there. And then on Monday, Monday and Tuesday, you're scheduled for a public hearing on the state library. And then next week, Wednesday and Thursday, we'll get back into some of the health-related licensing boards again.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the committee?
Madam Chair, the full committee meets tomorrow at what time?
8:30.
Madam Chair, Senator Gorley, I'm not sure, but we'll find that out and make sure that you're notified.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I had the same question because I think we're supposed to be on the floor at 8:30.
That's why I'm not sure what the answer to that question is.
You probably won't be meeting at 8:30 then.
Well, it didn't make any difference last week.
With no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned, and we will reconvene on Monday morning.